National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo, and welcome back to the Fit Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the side, going down audio shop talk right here, going into your ear hole, how we do it here on the Fix on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. I am your host, Joseph Ward, the realest mother lover to ever walk this earth. So you are welcome for this show. You heard me? Really going down. Hey, man, we got a good show today. It's going down. But I'm going to get to that in a minute. I'm the greatest. You know what I'm saying? Lennox is no conqueror. He's not Alexander. I'm the best.
That Mike Tyson. I had to put that Mike Tyson in there. Mike Tyson thing funny. But, hey, man, one time for all y'all who be listening to the Fix, supporting the Fix, doing your thing, sharing it, all that stuff there. Appreciate y'all, because the Fix can't do what it do without y'all. So I really, really, really love y'all. And I look forward to doing this show, man, so people can enjoy sports the way we're supposed to enjoy sports. So shout out to all y'all. Yeah. Heard me? Hey, remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog series, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, the African History Curriculum app, which is available in the Google App Store. So all you got to do is go on the Google App Store, type in On the Shoulders of Giants. Remember, we have an On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, as well as lectures, classes, educational sessions, keynote speaking engagements, all those things there. All you got to do is visit the website, www.ontheshouldersone.com. And if you want to learn more about the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, all you got to do is visit www.ontheshoulders.org. You get all the information you want. Remember, it's African history at your fingertips and on the go. And remember, it's a mixture of the history and the digital age. So whether you got a smartphone, whether you got a tablet, whether you got a, you know, on your computer, whether you got a smart board in your classroom, you know, you can have the books in your hand. You can print out PDFs, all that stuff there. So On the Shoulders of Giants, make sure you check them out. And also, remember, On the Shoulders of Giants is on Patreon. So if you want to support them, just go to patreon.com/OTSOG. Remember, that's patreon.com/OTSOG. And you can become a patron to support On the Shoulders of Giants and the endeavors to help the organization grow and be able to do more things in the community and the power of the community. And, you know, while you're at it, remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is also on Patreon. So all you got to do is patreon.com/fix. Go ahead and support your homeboy. Support your homeboy. Support your homeboy. You know what I'm saying? So patreon.com, that way it gives you a chance to be able to contribute to the people, organizations, and different creators who are out here doing their thing like we all doing. So shout out to everybody who I have created and doing their thing. You heard me? And remember, that Freedom Train website is www.freedomtrainradio.com, where you can learn more about the Fix Sports Podcast, our title show, the Freedom Train Podcast Series. Make sure you tune in to it. Make sure you tune in. Me and Pat be going in. Remember, got the Enigma Set Hour every Friday night at 10:30 p.m. So make sure you check that out. www.freedomtrainradio.com. Boom, boom, boom. just felt like doing that. All right, so give you a little rundown on what we're talking about today. So episode 17 of the Fix Sports Podcast, our HBCU spotlight will be shined on the Southern Jaguars because they beat Grambling in the 2018 Bayou Classic, so we're going to talk about that. Our HBCU news is the coach, Rod Reed, will keep his job at Tennessee State, so we're going to go in on that. Speaking of coaching, how about University of North Carolina Chapel Hill got a new football coach? They got a new head ball coach, and their new head ball coach is Mack Brown. And Mack Brown was the coach of the Texas squad that beat the USC Trojans. I think it was 2005 and 2005, yeah, because Reggie Bush won the Heisman over Vince Young. Vince Young really should have won it, but Reggie Bush won it. But Mack Brown coached that national championship team and led by Vince Young. And now, you know, Mack Brown hasn't coached in a while. He left Texas. Also going to talk about, I can't say his last name, but his first name, Francis. He do the UFC in Beijing, and he had a killer TKO of Curtis Blaydes. So I'm going to talk about that. So I'm also introducing tonight my Life After Sports segment, and I got my homie, my big homie, Sam Carter. He's going to be on the show. And Life After Sports is about people who are former athletes who are able to successfully transition into the civilian world and be able to find themselves and what they want to do. And these people have created, some of these people have created platforms that are dedicated to giving information back to people who want to success, or you know, helping people successfully transition from the sports world to the civilian world. But Sam Carter is one of those people who's actually created platforms that can do that. So I am going to interview him tonight. You hear me? Then, of course, you know, I got to give him a college football update. Got to give you a little NFL update. And my Friday rant, Stephen A. Smith is back in my rant, right? And I'm ranting on Stephen A. Smith. It's not that I don't agree with Steve. But, you know, it's a certain code that you got to live by. And Stephen A. Smith is in my weekly rant because Stephen A. Smith apparently don't know code, don't know protocol. Because he out here calling for Marvin Lewis's job. So he publicly, I don't give a damn what the black community thinks. Marvin Lewis should be fired. Now, I get it. Marvin Lewis probably shouldn't be the coach of the Bengals no more. But it's a certain code you got to live by. You don't go on TV and just try to blatantly get somebody fired because you don't like the outcome. So I got to let Stephen A. Smith have it tonight. And you know how we do, man. You know how we do. So let's go ahead and get into it. HBCU spotlight. Le Bayou. Le Classique. Le 2018. You heard me? You heard me? And so, let me get it. Hold on. All right, here we go. The wait was a long one for anyone associated with the Southern football program. After three consecutive Bayou Classic losses to Grambling, the Jaguars finally got the turnaround they wanted. But not without some drama. A football snap let Grambling score a pair of touchdowns early in the fourth quarter, all before Ladarius Skelton led another scoring drive for Southern. The sophomore quarterback made his first classic start and looked like he played that part many times before. His savvy play, mixed with his special teams punt block and recovery for the touchdown at the start, helped Southern win 38-28 before 67,871 in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome located in Atlanta, Georgia, the home of the Falcons. You hear me? Next, the Jaguars, who were 73 overall and 6-1 in the SWAC, will play in the SWAC championship game Saturday at Alcorn State. Ooh, I hope they show that. I want to see that. With the winner there set to face North Carolina A&T in the HBCU National Championship Celebration Bowl in December 15th. That's pretty cool. I'm kind of geeked about that. So, Skelton's biggest play went for 80 yards to Kendall Kellington and put Southern ahead 24-13 midway through the third quarter. Not long before then, Southern opened the second half with a drive that reached inside the Grambling tent. There, a fumble picked up by Grambling defensive lineman LeAllen Clark. That boy named LeAllen. Wow, that boy named LeAllen. That's funny, LeAllen. All right, so the lineman named LeAllen Clark returned nearly the full length of the field suddenly at the Tigers in position to tie the score. All right, Southern forced a field goal. Then came a big pass play from Skelton. Look that is. Look that is. Skelton's 80-yard bomb wasn't the only big play. On the next possession, he hit Randall Maynard for a 44-yard pass in the end zone for a 31-13 lead. He also made big plays with his feet, rushing 17 times for 79 yards. Things nearly unraveled in the fourth quarter, though. You heard me? Grambling quarterback Jeremy Hickbottom. Wow, that's a hell of a last name. Jeremy Hickbottom scored on the keeper near the goal line early in the quarter and completed a 2-point pass that made the score 31-21. Then, not after, Skelton lost the fumble recovered by Grambling's Jeremy Carter. Hickbottom then scored on another keeper to make the score 31-28. Southern responded with a 7-play drive that ended with Devin Ben's 3-yard touchdown run. That drive included another big play from Skelton, his 23-yard pass to Jeremiah's Houston to get inside the 10. In the first half, Skelton and Hickbottom both threw touchdown passes. Hickbottom's 30-yard pass to Derek Clark tied the score at 7-7 late in the third quarter. Skelton's 23-yard pass to Trey Smith put Southern ahead 17-7 late in the second. The big special teams play came less than 2 minutes after the start, with Grambling, who finished the season at 6-4 and 5-2 in the SWAC, they had to punt from their 22. So Southern dude named Cordell Caldwell from Southern, he blocked the punt that Benjamin Harris scooped up near the end zone for the easy touchdown. So it looked for some time that the block, punt, and score could be a difference making play. But since that play came before Skelton took his first snap, the real difference maker in the game hadn't yet stepped on the field. Who? That is. You heard me? So that's it, man. Southern, after 3 years of not winning the Bayou Classic, came back and they got that Bayou Classic win. Oh, man, FAMU. That made me think about FAMU. That made me think about FAMU losing to BCU again for 8 years in a row. It just made me sad. But it ain't about me being sad. It's about me celebrating Southern Jaguars for their victory in the 2018 Bayou Classic. So y'all already know how we do. Go ahead and put the hands up. What you say now? Do 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 do. I don't know no Southern song. Do 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 do. You a Jaguar and you from Southern. So man, nah, that's cool though, man. I'm happy Southern got that Bayou Classic win up under their belt, and they like, all right, man, we back in the game. They ain't stepping on us like that no more, so they can't brag this year. Because BCU can only brag against FAMU about winning football games. Like, that's it. Because everything else is about FAMU. We just better at life than BCU. Just peered across the board. So we let them win football to feel good. But, you know, one time Southern, though, man. Southern got a good band, too. Southern do have a good band. Like I keep telling y'all, if y'all don't know nothing about black college football, when you go to a game, don't be shocked about the culture that hit you right in your face. And yes, people dress up like they're going to the club at HBCU ball games. You heard me? All right, man, let's get to some HBCU news. So let's go from Atlanta. Well, the game was in Atlanta, but let's go from the state of Louisiana to the state of Tennessee, home of the whiskey. Home of 8-Ball and MJG, home of 3-6 Mafia. Maine, I'm from Memphis, Maine. Yeah. Come on, Maine. So, Head coach of Tennessee State football team, Rod Reed, will return as Tennessee State's head coach because he was on the hot seat. So Rod Reed will return as Tennessee State's head coach next season. After meeting with athletic director Teresa Phillips on Monday, Reed was told that he would be allowed to fulfill his current contract, which has 1 year left on. And the 2019 season will be Reed's 10th at TSU, and he plans to remain as the Tigers' coach well beyond that. He is confident that he will receive a contract extension after next season, right? And this is Coach Reed talking. It's great that I'm going to get another year, but I don't look at it as finishing up my contract. We're nowhere near finished. I'm very excited about next season. I think when we get this team back healthy again with all the kids we have and coming back, we'll be in really good shape, right? So Phillips could not be reached for comment. Tennessee State finished 4-5 after claiming a 31-28 overtime win Saturday over UT Martin in Hale Stadium. The victory left Reed a 53-47 overall record and 27-39 in the Ohio Valley Conference. Some of the key returning players include cornerback DeJour Nesbitt. Hey, but hey man, son, think about the ACC spotlight, man. These names, boy. Black folk makes colorful names, boy. DeJour, the war. I don't know. Okay, Nesbitt, a junior who was named to the All-Ohio Valley Conference first team on Tuesday, along with junior wide receiver Chris Rowland and offensive guard Raekwon Allen, who made second team. Boy named Raekwon. His parents had to listen to the Wu-Tang. Also back will be junior defensive end Makai Brown and Alabama transfer and freshman kicker Antonio Zeta, who both made the all-newcomer team. Starting quarterback Demary Croft was lost at midseason with a shoulder injury, and center Thomas Burton was lost with an ACL injury. Croft will be back at TSU, is requesting a medical red shirt for Burton, who is a senior. The upside to all the young players he had put into replace the injured players is they got a lot of experience, which will help them next season, Reed said. So I'm guessing this is, they didn't really go full into the contract, but I'm guessing this probably is the last year of his contract. And so since this is the last year of his contract, the athletic director said we don't go ahead and let you finish. But basically, he got the win. And if he don't win, then Rod Reed may not be the head coach of the Tennessee State football team in 2020. So he is, you know, on the hot seat, so to speak. You got to win. You got to win. Like, he has to win. Like, Coach Reed has to win. Like, and they got to win Ohio Valley. Because his Ohio Valley record ain't good, man. Like, his Ohio Valley record ain't really good at all. So, yeah, man, Coach, you got to ball out, man. I hope them players, though, I hope the experience or the time that they spent playing really helps them this year. Because if it don't help them, it could be bon voyage for Coach Reed. That ain't what he wants. Because you see, he talking about he want to coach beyond. So we're going to see if his players play for him. Because if his players don't play for him, he's going to be in trouble. He's going to be in big trouble because he's not going to have a job. Tennessee State gonna roll on. He may get a job somewhere else, in some either in the head coaching capacity or another capacity. But yeah, man, he got the ball out. Like Tennessee State got the ball out. And if they don't, it's gonna be quick. All right, man. So let's move on. Let's move on. Let's move on. So I'm scrolling. You know I be scrolling because I be looking for. You know, I read a lot. I be looking for stories and stuff to come to bring to y'all, right? And I'm scrolling, and I see that, excuse me, I see that Mac Brown is the coach for North Carolina. But like I'm telling y'all earlier, right, Mac Brown coached the 2005 Texas Longhorn National Championship team led by Vince Young, who should have won the Heisman Trophy, but they gave it to Reggie Bush. And I understand why Reggie Bush won, because Reggie Bush was electrifying from first to last game. But, you know, Vince Young was the most valuable player. And I thought that's what that war was about. But, of course, you know, in these sports realms, the real definition of valuable, their definition of valuable don't line up. Right? So I saw that North Carolina was looking at Mack Brown as a candidate to be the head coach of their team. So my first thoughts was, I wonder how that's going to work. Because Mac, he didn't leave Texas on good standing. And he basically was like, if not the one of Texas's top two greatest coaches of all time, right? And it didn't end well because the seasons, the players, the teams, they wasn't good. Texas wasn't Texas no more, right? It was, at least, you know, it wasn't a Texas that he was even used to because he was used to winning. Mack Brown, like I said, is one of Texas's winningest coaches of all time, if not the winningest coach of all time. But the problem is, well, I don't know what the problem was, to be honest. I said that like I knew what it was, but I don't know what the problem was, but it just didn't all come together for him. It really didn't all come together for him, so Mack Brown ended up having to, he got fired. So thinking about that, when I think Mack Brown, North Carolina. Even listening to Mack Brown talk don't even scream North Carolina. You know what I'm saying? It screams Texas. But we're going to see how it works. But let's read, though. North Carolina has hired Mack Brown to lead its football program, the school announced in a press release on Tuesday. The announcement came minutes after an emergency board of trustees meeting on Tuesday morning. Brown's total pay will be $3.5 million a year. Brown, who is 67, returned to UNC after 21 years. He coached 10 seasons at UNC. So I didn't know that. So we just learned something. If you already knew it, shout out to you. He coached 10 seasons at UNC from 1988 to 97. During that span, he amassed a 69-46-1 record. And from 92 until his final year there in 97, he helped lead the Tar Heels to 5 consecutive bowl games. In his final year, the Tar Heels climbed as high as number 4 in the top AP 25 poll and finished number 6 overall. Mack Brown has a proven record of building programs, and he doesn't just develop football players, he also develops people of strong character. UNC Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham said in the press release, it's funny they athletic director named Bubba. He knows how to win championships, and he expects his student athletes to win in the classroom and community as well. We're excited about his plans for our football program. I am thrilled to welcome Coach Brown and wife Sally back to Chapel Hill. See, the funny part is, he spent time in North Carolina, then he went to Texas to come back to North Carolina, and then athletic director named Bubba. That screamed country as hell all over that. That's just country as hell all over that, right? Bubba. Brown will be 68 when the 2019 season begins. He is revered among UNC fans and is often credited with helping to change perception of the pro football program that football did not matter to that school. In his first two seasons at UNC, his team finished 1-10. In his final season, his team finished 10-1. He left UNC after the 1997 regular season for Texas, where he won the national championship in 2005, like I told y'all, finished undefeated. He also made it to his BCS national championship game in 2009 before losing to Alabama, right, because Colt McCoy got hurt. And Colt McCoy hurt his shoulder. See, Alabama always hurting quarterbacks, right? Colt McCoy got hurt. I forgot about that game. Colt McCoy got hurt and had to put the backup in. And Texas almost made a comeback. But if Colt McCoy would have been playing in that game, Nick Saban would have one less national championship. I swear. Colt McCoy, if he would have been playing in that game, because the way Texas played with the backup quarterback, they would beat Alabama with Colt McCoy. But anyway, Brown resigned after the 2013. Man, that man got fired. This is my resign. He resigned, after the 2013 season, which was also the last time he has been the head coach. I thought it was longer than that, but it ain't been that long. Okay. So just 5 years. Brown was most recently a college football commentator for ESPN. I'm surprised he's doing it, former Texas AD D-Loss Dodds. That's another name, D-Loss. That boy named D-E-L-O-S-S, D-Loss, Dodds, who hired Brown in 1997, said he won a national championship here, and it's hard to get better than that. But North Carolina is very fortunate. He'll turn it around, no question. Brown has also been the head coach at Tulane from 85 to 87 and Appalachian State from 83. He is 244, 122, and 1 in his career as a head coach and 13 and 7 in bowl games. Sally and I love North Carolina. We love this university, and we're thrilled to be back. The best part of coaching is the player. Building relationships, building confidence, and ultimately seeing them build success on and off of the field. We can't wait to meet our current student athletes and reconnect with friends, alumni, and fellow Tar Heel coaches. We thank UNC's Board of Trustees, Chancellor Folk, and Bubba Cunningham for supporting our return to our Carolina family. The move to hire Brown was made swiftly. UNC fired Larry Fedora on Sunday after 7 seasons. Fedora amassed a 45-43 record, but just this past season, UNC finished 2-9 and had struggled in recruiting. Fedora's buyout was a little more than $12 million. UNC will pay him about $3 million for the next 4 years. The money will be paid for by the Department of Athletics, and I will take that firing any day. So the big day for North Carolina, UNC Chancellor C. Carol L. Folk said in the press conference, "We are welcoming back a coach who built a winning football program during his first tenure in Chapel Hill, one that reflected the values, coaching, and commitment to the excellence we aspire to in everything we do at this university. While Chancellor, I have gotten to know Mac and have always admired his commitment to the success of student athletes and passion for the college game. I'm looking forward to welcoming Mac and Sally back to Carolina." We get to welcome back Mac Brown to the North Carolina family. Break out your whiskey, crank up the 8 Ball and MJG, and crank up the 3-6 Mafia. Crank up the Yo Gotti and the Young Buck, because it's time to have a party. Tell Elvis and Graceland it's... No, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm still thinking about Tennessee. I'm tripping. I'm still thinking about Rod Reed. You got to crank up the Petey Pablo. You got to crank up the little brother. I don't know if Knight won this from North Carolina, but you got to crank up the Petey Pablo and the little brother and get ready to go party, because we now Mac Brown's back in town in North Carolina. North Carolina, go on and raise it up. Take your shirt off, twist around your head, swing like a helicopter. You know what I'm talking about? So that's what's going down in North Carolina in college football lane. With Dirty Danny. College football. All right, so let's talk about fighting. Talk about people getting them hands put on. Talk about people getting dropped. He put them hands on that man. He put them hands on that man. Francis stops Curtis Blades in 4 to 5 seconds because he put them hands on that man. Francis N-G-A-N-N-O-U, that's how you spell his name, is back. It took him less than a minute to remind all of us by finishing Curtis Blades with the bomb of a right hand and relentless follow-up punches. Francis started the fight with a thudding leg kick on Curtis Blades. It looked like Blades. Blades responded by rushing forwards with the flurry that Francis avoided. Francis separated, then stepped forwards calmly with the thunderous right hand that landed behind Blaze's ear. Blaze's face planted on the canvas. Blaze tried to recover and looked as if he had a chance to come back. But Francis would not let up. Referee Mark Goddard gave Blaze plenty of time to get back into the fight, but he just couldn't do it. The ref was forced to stop the fight and hand Francis the TKO victory. "I'm back," Francis proclaimed following the win. Get your head dropped in 4 to 5 seconds, man. That's crazy. Get your ass dropped in 45 seconds in a professional UFC fight, man. That's crazy. That's. I haven't really. Yes, I have. I'm finna lie. I haven't really heard a lot of stories like that. We don't hear a lot, but I've heard several. But that's embarrassing. That's kind of embarrassing, man. When you know what I'm saying, man? Like, you're a professional fighter, right? And you get your ass dropped in 45 seconds. But somebody drop your ass, like, for real, though. Like 45 seconds. Bro, you know how quick that is? Like, you know, you really know how quick 45 seconds is. Like, sometimes it takes longer time than that to warm up stuff in the microwave. You can spend longer time in the bathroom. Or you should spend longer time in the bathroom brushing your teeth. It takes longer than that to make a sandwich. Sometimes it takes more than that, longer than that, to pull out your driveway. You know what I'm saying? 4 to 5 seconds. I done had farts longer than that. 4 to 5 seconds. Hey, man. Can't be out here getting caught slipping, though. He seemed like he got caught slipping. He got his ass caught slipping. Go bam! A hook. Caught him with that right, and it was over. 4 to 5 seconds. Face planted. Where did face hit the ground? Where did face hit the ground? Face first. Think about it. Think about somebody hitting you in your face. Or they say hit them behind the ear. Think about somebody hitting you behind your ear, right? And then your ear fall face first. But you ain't in no, you're not in a structured setting. Like, you're not in no ring or nothing like that. Like, you in the streets. And your ass fall face first on the concrete. I don't know why my mind just went there, but my mind went there. But imagine that, though. Imagine somebody busting you in your face or anywhere in your head and you falling face first. Kabam. You ain't really talking about too much. You know that, right? You ain't even talking about too much. All right, everybody. So now we're going to go into our Life After Sports segment. So I told y'all I'm debuting my Life After Sports segment. So today is the first of the one. I want to kick it off like this because, like I told you, my guest, Sam Carter, he has been able to build platforms that can help athletes be able to successfully transition from sports into the civilian world and be able to thrive. But not only that, he's built platforms that, through the realm of sports, have been able to give back to the community and help the young athletes be able to actually have athletic careers at all. Some of them grow up in environments where they don't really have much. Yeah, they got all these skills, they got talent, but they don't really have much in direction to help them get where they need to go. So this gentleman has built his programs and everything like that geared toward these kids. And like I said, not just helping athletes transition from the realm of sports to the civilian world and be able to thrive, but be able to help current and future athletes be able to actually have a career. So without further ado, I want to welcome my homie, Mr. Sam Carter, to the Fix Sports Podcast. What's going on, Sam?
Hey, man, how y'all doing tonight out there in TV land, world land, radio land?
All of it. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, everything's good, man. And actually, when you called me, before I got on the call, that's what I was doing. I was speaking with a coach up in Charlotte, North Carolina, about some programming on some kids and doing some things up there. I have a kid that's a client of mine up there, and a parent told one of the coaches up there about what we do, and me and him been on the phone for the last hour.
Oh, that's what's up, man. See, that's good. So you already on it. So you already got your juices flowing. That's what's up, man.
Oh yeah. I'm in rare form, and I just got a text for another parent about contacting a parent on two kids who play over at Leon High School.
Right.
And their uncle. Matter of fact, Tracy Maxwell, Coach Maxwell. You know who
right.
Coach Maxwell
right.
is in
right.
Jacksonville. He just forwarded me two contacts on some kids here in town that are twins that play over at Leon High School.
That's what's up, man. So
that's what we do, Joe.
I see that. But before we get deep into it, before we really just put it on their brain right there, I want you kind of give the folks some background information about you as an athlete, and then we already talked about what you do now a bit, but can you like give them the full scope of what you do now as far as the organizations and things that you've created?
Well, basically, in 1996, I had an injury that kept me from moving on and playing professional ball. So I immediately started my wheels to turning on what can I do to help kids from my community experience what I had just experienced being a Division I college athlete. And I didn't know anybody that played ball or went off to big-time college before I went off in my neighborhood. I didn't know anybody that did. I knew guys who went off, came back home, but I didn't know anybody that actually went off, played, graduated, then came back home.
Right.
I wanted to give kids that experience, and being that I had two younger brothers, they were the first two clients that I ever had, because when I came home, I got hurt. I realized that I wanted my brothers to move on further than I did. So I started working diligently, trying to help them with the recruiting process, getting information out and doing all of those things. And, you know, I was just blessed to have two tremendous athletes as younger brothers, and they played at University of Alabama and Tulane. So just because of their success, other parents and people were asking me to help kids and help people with, you know, trying to further their college careers and things of that nature. So we all kind of just started here at Carter's Corner as Hot Recruiters, which was a recruiting service that helped kids transition from high school to college. And that's how we started out.
Right. Okay. And your brother that played at Tulane also played in the NFL as well.
Yeah, my brother Kemp Carter played at Tulane University. Then he played for Buffalo. He played in the World Bowl team for Berlin Thunder for two seasons. And he also has a Grey Cup ring with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers up in the Canadian Football League. So he has had tremendous success in football.
Right, right. And his brother Antonio Carter that played for Alabama got like one of the greatest like plays ever when I think they was playing Florida. And he gave like he broke the ankles of the whole defense in like one play. Like he, you know, that Florida deadlift. He put it on the like broke all everybody's ankle in like one move. I never forget that watching that. And he was a freshman too. So
yeah, he was a true freshman coming out of Rutgers, starting in the SEC. Broke Ozzie Newsome's records as true freshman with some of the catches and per game touchdowns and all kind of stuff at Bama. So, yeah, we've had some good success in my mama house with some football now.
Right. And where did you play ball?
I played ball at Mississippi Delta Community College, and then I went on and played ball at Idaho State University.
Okay, well now let me ask you this. So as far as you, because you helped your brothers get to college, so who helped you get to college?
Really, man, it was just by the grace of God, man. I mean, at the end of the day, truly, that's what happened. I mean, one of my friends who was trying to get into school himself sent a film off to a coach in Minnesota. The coach in Minnesota saw me playing, but he didn't need a wide receiver because they primarily ran the ball. So he called his sister's husband, who was a wide receiver coach in Mississippi. And that's how my family got to Mississippi Delta. They called to Rickards. I had graduated. It was the summertime. They didn't know where I was at. I was in Orlando working at McDonald's with my sister. And I got a phone call from Mississippi Delta Community College asking me if I wanted to come play football. And that's basically how I got into college.
Wow. Nah, that's a good story. Though. Nah, that's real. That's a good, cause that's real life though. Like that's real life.
And then my homeboy that sent the film off, he didn't even play at the school he sent the film to. And you know, I ended up going and playing ball for 4 years all the way through college, and he did.
Right. Nah, that's crazy. That's crazy. But you know, it was meant to be for you though, man. So that's what's up, man. So,
on National Signing Day, I signed with Florida A&M. My dad played at FAMU for Rudy Hubbard, so I wanted to play at FAM. I didn't have the grades, so I didn't, you know, have the opportunity to move on because I didn't have the ACT score. Right. Hell, I was the MVP of the North-South Shrine game in 91 in Jacksonville where they play over in the Shrine Bowl, so the very first Shrine Bowl to be exact. So, I mean...
Right.
But I just didn't have the grades.
Right, right. But and then you went from Mississippi Delta to Idaho State, and you know, I've been able to see your highlight films from high school and college, and you had some sick plays, man. You had some sick plays, and then you had your signature move after you scored with throwing that football up in the stands.
Yeah, man, that was my move, you know what I'm saying? I used to throw the ball, get a crowd something to, you know, feel like they was a part of the game, man. You know, I had to do something.
Right, right. So my listeners, just giving you a good view of somebody who has been able to play the sport of football at a high level, but also help others who play football at a high level be able to actually be able to play football. So you mentioned about you hurting your knee in 96, so... When you realized that your career was over, how were you able to transition from sports world to being able to go get a job and then eventually create your own businesses?
Well, I mean, it's like with anything else. What do you believe in? What's your passion? And I've always genuinely loved my two little brothers. So my entire goal out of this entire thing was to simply help my two little brothers go to school and play football like I did. Because of the experience, dude, I went from Bond Community, one of the worst communities in North Florida, one of the worst communities in Tallahassee. I went from one of the worst environments a kid could possibly grow up in, and no matter what city you live in, you have that type of a community.
Right.
I came from that type of community where despair and poverty and just hopelessness is always available if you're looking for that. I didn't want that for my two little brothers. So I wanted them to experience what I did. I just went off to college, lived in a dorm, ate food for free, played football, traveled, flew all over the country. While some of my homeboys was riding on buses from prison to prison, I was flying on airplanes from stadium to stadium. And I wanted my little brothers to experience that. So I came back home with a plan that, man, I was going to get my brothers in college. And that was my passion. And that's what got me fueled to learn how and what the process was for helping kids get into school. Cause I wanted to help my brothers.
Right. Right. And you're about to have another generation of Alabama playing with J-Rock out there balling on the board.
Oh, yeah, man. We got another generation coming up, man, that want to play at Bama. I've been blessed to have about 7 kids that came through my program that have played at Alabama and got kids playing in the NFL, have kids playing football all over this country that have come through, you know, my program. So, man, you know, I've been blessed to be able to watch football, and it really feels good when you're watching football on Saturdays and Sundays, and you know that you are a direct reflection of what the world is getting ready to see, because the kids who are out there playing, and some of them dominating your kids.
Right.
I've been knowing some of those kids, man, since they were 5, 7, 9, 10 years old, man, and now they on TV in front of the world just giving everybody what I knew they had in them when they were 7 years old. That's a beautiful feeling.
That's what's up. And did you help Elton Patterson get to the league?
Man, I helped. EP was one of my kids that we coached in high school. Elton was one of the kids that I mentored and helped get through Central Florida, and then move on, and he played and had a great career in the NFL. And now that he's done with the NFL, he's a sports agent, and he represents players. He sells real estate. He does motivational speaking. I help him with a lot of that stuff, too, with representing his clients and providing services to his agency. So we still work together.
Right, that's what's up. And so taking advantage of your time in school, you got a master's degree in sports management, correct?
Correct.
So, and there's a story to that, because you can kind of give a kind of story to that, of how you was able to get your master's for free.
Well, when I was hurt at Rickards, I just knew I wanted to, you know, coach college football. And my dream was to be a college football coach. So I started looking at, you know, how do people become college football coaches? And one of the things people always told me, man, you got to be a GA. And I didn't even know what a GA was. It was graduate assistant. So I was like, what is a GA? So I started kind of looking at what a GA was. And they were like, grad school, you got to go to grad school. I'm like, grad school? Shit, I barely got out of college. You know what I mean? Right. Going to grad school now? So I had to try to figure out how I was going to do that. And then one of my buddies was like, man, they had this big coaching clinic for all the college coaches, you know, once a year. You need to go there, meet some people, pass out your resume and stuff, and see if you can get hired. Well, the conference that particular year was in Anaheim, California.
Okay.
I figured out how much it was going to cost for me to get to the clinic, how much my plane ticket, had to pay for hotel room, this, that. Short come to none, man, I saved up almost $2,300 on a wish and a dream to try to go get a job. And I flew out to Anaheim, California. I stayed out there for a week passing out resumes. I didn't get one bite. I came back home, it was substitute teaching, and one of the coaches that I met in Anaheim was recruiting some kids at Rickards High School where I was subbing at. And told me that, you know, they were looking for a young minority coach. I needed to call the head coach if I was interested at Troy. So I called, you know, Troy University, and the head coach told me, said, yeah, Carter, I remember you. We recruited you out of high school. You know, I'm interested in you coming in to interview. He said, if you want the job, you need to be here tomorrow morning at 11. So I packed up all my stuff and drove to Troy, Alabama, man. I ain't even think about whether I was going to get the job or not. I thought I was just going to interview, and I got up there, and they gave me the job. And for a whole year, I drove from Tallahassee to Troy every day, took grad school, and coached Division I college football and got my master's degree. And because I was coaching at the school, I was able to take classes and didn't have to pay for them as a graduate assistant. And that's how I got my master's degree, and that's how I got into college football.
That's determination, though, right there.
And don't mind you now, graduate assistants don't get paid. You don't get a paycheck when you're a GA.
Right. So how long was that drive from Tallahassee to Troy every day?
3 hours, one way. So that's 6 hours a day. I was on the road. And that's after I done went to work and went to class. I didn't get out of class till 9:30, 10 o'clock at night some nights. I would get on the road at 11, 11:30, get to Tallahassee 1, 2 in the morning, get 2-3 hours of sleep, wake up at 4, 5 in the morning, get back on the road because I had to be the staff meeting every morning at 7:30.
Right. Taking care of your family, taking care and making sure you can support or you can build a foundation for a solid future.
Dude, I gave up a job making $28,000 a year, and a year later I was making $80,000 because I was willing to sacrifice making nothing for 1 year. And that's why my company motto is success is measured by sacrifice. I tell people all the time, if you're willing to give something up to get something, you might be all right. But whatever you want in life, if you ain't willing to give up something to get it, you ain't going to get that.
That's true. That's true. So as we talked about Carter's Corner, can you kind of give like a full breakdown of Carter's Corner and what all you do and the different components to it?
Oh, man. Carter's Corner is a community service program. So people ask me all the time, you know, well, what is a community service program? What is it that you actually do through through your services. Well, it's a branch of services that we provide through athletic case management. That's one component where we work with kids, families, and school systems, coaches, whoever, helping with providing support to student athletes with whatever their needs may be to be successful with transitioning from either high school to college, college to pros, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we do athletic case management. I mean, just like mental health and physical doctors or whoever may need case management, we know the athletes need that service as well. So we do that. We also at Carter's Corner provide community service programs where I work with community providers that provide at-risk youth services, mental health services, HIV services, whatever it is that they do. Our agency helps them through volunteerism, helping them with community service hours by placing men or women in the community at their agency to help them with supportive services due to them may needing community service hours to get their driver's license back or to serve for fee payment for child support or whatever they may be having issues with the court. They can come to our agency, do community service hours, and get those fees eliminated by, you know, providing that support to us. So we do those type of community service programs. And then we also have a program called Good Sports, where I teach kids about non-traditional sport jobs. Okay. So we get a kid in that's between the age of 8 and whatever age up. I mean, we have kids that are 12, 13, and I have some kids who are 23, 24 who are getting out of college who are trying to get some information, and I help guide them through a career path. But what we do is we take these kids and we teach them about non-traditional sport jobs. Somebody's got to cut the field. Somebody's got to serve at the concession. Somebody's got to take tickets. Somebody's got to work the concession in the booth. Somebody's got to be up in the box picking the clock and playing the music. All of those are jobs. And a lot of times our kids don't know about those jobs because they don't know anyone that does them.
Right.
So I introduce all these different careers through sports, sports engineering, sports facility management, sports directors, sports programming and management and marketing and all of those different aspects that people don't generally think of. All career paths in sports. So I try to get kids to tell me what they're interested in, what they like to do, and then I kind of show them how they can do what they love to do every day and work in the world of sports and athletics like I do.
Right.
So that's what we do.
That's what's up, man. But, shit, that's just what's up, man. That's live, though. Nah, because even like what you're doing with Good Sports and introducing people to non-traditional sports jobs, and you named a few non-traditional sports jobs, but like you said, though, in all of my years of watching football, until like having one conversation with you about that, I never thought about who the hell paint the field. Like, when the last time you went to a football game, like it was, you ain't go to no football game in the last 100 years and they have no food there. Like somebody got to sell the food. Like there are different things. Somebody got to run the lights. Somebody got to pay the referees. Somebody got the referee. Like somebody got to take the pictures. Somebody got to call the game. So,
and like I told one of the kids the other day, who sold hot dogs to the hot dog man? Like he can't sell hot dogs unless a vendor gives him a good deal on hot dogs. So even at that component is being a wholesale distributor in the sports industry. You can work in sports by selling merchandise, marketing merchandise, being a vendor that have goods that coaches use. Somebody's got to make the dummy bags that the football players use for practice.
Right.
That's a vendor. All of those are careers. So I introduce kids. If you like to sell stuff, dude, you can sell cookies, or you can sell hats and pennants, or you can sell turf. You can sell the water bottles that the players use to drink out of. There's a lot of stuff you can sell if you like to sell, and you can work in sports and do that.
Right.
And you don't need a degree. You need to know how to sell stuff really well. So, you know, it's a lot of, there's a lot of jobs that you can use in sports and sports management that are not degree driven. Now, there are a lot that you can make a lot of money that are degree driven, but there are very lucrative jobs in sports that you don't have to have not one iota of a degree. You just have to have the will and the mind frame to do it. I have a friend who has a contract with a professional sports team to do supervision of parking in the parking area, and he makes $140,000 a season.
Say that one more time. Say that one more time.
I have a friend who has a contract with a professional sports team, and all his contract is him and his group of employees making sure that the parking service areas are good. That's what he does. They walk the parking area, making sure folks' cars aren't being scratched, keyed, broken into, and that the area around the stadium is secure as far as parking is concerned. And right. Most NFL teams only play 6 to 8 games at home. So
right.
He lives in Tampa but works in Jacksonville during football season because that's where he makes his money at, working the football games when they have home games.
Right.
And all him and his guys do is those are the type of contract services that you can provide if you have the will to and the know-it-all to do those things. And that's what I teach kids, how to get involved with that kind of stuff.
So let me ask you this, because you mentioned the kids not having to have degrees to get a lot of these jobs. And I think that's significant, because we see a lot of kids that go through football programs, like high school football programs, who their grades be trash because nobody ever puts them to focus on their grades. So what are your thoughts about kids going through the high school system or even college system like that, not really learning the information that they in school? And do you think that helps or hurt them in the long run if their career is over quicker than they expected and they're trying to make some out of themselves?
Well, anytime you go through a process and don't get something out of it, it's bad. Mm-hmm. So when you go through 4 years of high school and you don't get anything out of it, that's bad.
Right.
So why didn't the kid get something out of it? Well, because one, the people he were around didn't show him what his experiences were supposed to be out of the situation. He didn't have good guidance, right? So you can't blame kids on that, because they're kids. It's the adults. Right. And that's why we provide wraparound services through my agency. We work with the family and everybody to try to make sure that these kids are understanding what the process is, because a lot of times Mr. Potato Head has his nose where his eye is supposed to be because mama or somebody didn't put him together right. So that's the first thing, is that we try to do that. But we try to make sure that the kids and the guys that we work with are always thinking about post-career. I'm always telling these guys, you cannot play forever. And just because you good don't mean you're going to be on somebody's team.
Right.
So
that's true.
So you have to prepare for the next stage in life. And that's something that we do at Carter's Corner that I take pride in doing. We prepare kids to move on. I don't want kids around me forever. Even when they go off and play in the NFL, I don't harass my kids. I don't call them asking them for money. I don't try to get them to give me no tickets, none of that stuff. Because part of what I was trying to do was get them to be independent men and move on with their life. And when they see coach, they love me, they hug me, they give me five, we talk, we laugh, and then I send them back to where they came from in the world, because they got other people to go take care of while I'm doing what I do. And that's something right. that I take pride in doing. I don't harp on holding on to these kids, you know, just for my personal benefit. So that's part of what our program is teaching kids how to move on in life. So when we're working with these athletes, we're constantly telling them about post-career. I'm always, when these kids in the 9th, 10th grade, I'm talking to them, what is it that you're going to do after you play football?
Right.
We start that conversation real early. My son is in the 8th grade. He has 7th grade buddies that are in our program, and these kids know what they want to do. because we talk about those things openly and all the time.
That's what's up. But I talk about that all the time, because one thing I hate to see is when the family expects this athlete to save the family, but they don't necessarily prepare him to be a full person in the world, because everybody is so concentrating on the athletic ability and not developing the person's mind. Because, you know, if you develop an athlete's mind, not only will they be even better in their respective sport, but as a human being and after sports, they can still be able to thrive rather than, like, reality hit them, it's over, and then they're trying to start over something that, and they may not have the same type of success, which could damage them psychologically. So,
not only that, Joe, but Joe, you got to look at this too. It's also the other end of the spectrum. You have kids who are very successful who do make it off to Alabama, like mm-hmm. my brother. And when they play ball at that level for 3, 4, 5 years of their life, they are put on an area of society that they cannot sustain, because the only reason they're there is because they are playing football.
Right.
Once it's done, whether you age out, whether you get hurt, at some point in time, you got to stop playing. So mm-hmm. you got guys who, when they stop playing, man, they don't know how to go back into the regular world and function, because they've never had to be a regular person.
Right.
Like, since they've been in high school, they've been ushered, they've been sacrificed to, they've been told how great they are, they've been given what they needed, and now all of a sudden they don't matter no more because they can't play no more. Man, Cats can't handle that.
That's true. That is true, man.
Cats can't handle that.
So have you ever encountered, like, athletes who were in that state where they can't handle it? And if so, like, were you able to help them?
Yeah. Man, I'm trying to tell you, I just told you. Man, I'm talking about, like, I have guys that call me all the time, my kids that call me all the time, that when they finish playing ball and they have to go back into either finding a job or looking for something to do, they start leaning on stuff that I told them. And right. they call me.
Okay.
And
okay.
I start talking them through the process. All right, remember when you told me you wanted to be a coach? Okay, now look, this is what you got to do. You need to go down to the school board. Let the school board know you want to become a coach. Put in a volunteer application with them, so that way you can at least start going on campus and talking to the principal and folks, because you'll be cleared to be on their school ground. After you do that, you need to go to the Department of Education. Put in an application to get your coaching certificate. Once you get that letter back from the Department of Education, take that down to the school board and then apply for a teaching job or a coaching job. Once you apply for a job, go to the school where you got the application in at, tell the principal who you are. And so I start walking them through this process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And reminding them of what I told them. And because it's not foreign to them, they snap into it. Some of them, it take them a minute because they still trying to chase the carrot. Because they got other people still in their ear telling them, man, you can still play. Or, man, I got somebody who can hook you up with a job because of this. And so they kind of chase a lot of stuff around. But it's no different than anything. If you give somebody a good foundation in something, when they get in real trouble, they're going to always go back to what they know best. And that's the basic. And if you give them a good foundation, they'll go back to it. So I have to deal with that all the time with kids that haven't played. Because it took me a second to kind of – I had to snap into it really quick because I had a family at a really early age. So when I got hurt, I didn't have time to mope around. When I was in the hospital bed with my knee in the air, I called my old high school and talked to the head football coach who happened to know my dad at the time and said, Coach, I done got hurt, man. I'm going to be looking for a job. He said, when you get out of the hospital, come see me. I need some help with my JV. That's how I got on.
Right.
I mean, I snapped right into what I needed to do, and I started substitute teaching and coaching and working and learning how the school system worked, and then figured out what I needed to do to get hired in the school system. But once I learned how to get hired in the school system, now I can pass that information on to other people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I started doing. And that's what I did. And that's how I've gotten a lot of guys coaching jobs, because I told them the process. And once people know the process for something, it make it less scary for them than trying to find it out on their own and run into brick walls like I did. Because I didn't know you had to have a certified transcript. So I just went down there and turned in my paper transcript that I had photocopied when I left school. And them people was like, no, nah, man, you can't turn this in.
Yeah,
so I didn't know that. So, you know what I'm saying? So I had to learn. So I had to learn stuff the hard way by trial and error. But once I figured out the system, I was able to pass that on to my kids that I was working with and coaching and teaching. Well, that's been the same thing that I've done with a lot of stuff, learning how to start my own business, understanding what paperwork needs to be submitted. Once you learn how to do it and you do it and you do it, then you become an expert at it. Then you can start teaching others how to do it. And that's all this stuff is, Joe.
Right. Now, I feel you. I feel you. So, well, let me ask you this question, because you made me think about it as you was talking. I just recently was reading a new book that's coming out by Kizzy Conyers. And I was telling you about that the other day. She got a book called Go Beyond. And the book is designed to just what we're talking about, to help, to give athletes information on transitioning from sports. But one of the things she was talking about in the book was the identity of an athlete, because, you know, if you're a high-profile, really good athlete within your sport, you'll be profiled just as that athlete. So have you had to deal with kids whose their whole mindset was just caught up on being an athlete, and like, how did you help them like really get into knowing themselves and identifying themselves, who they are outside the athletic realm?
Yeah, I have a real cool thing that I do with kids and people. I have a nice, big, pretty championship ring that I walk around with on every day, and I wear it every day because I work hard as hell every day trying to win it. When I'm going to win something like that or not walk around with it, people look at me crazy because I wear it everywhere, but that's what I do. And when I go places, I tell people all the time, I take that ring off and I put it on the table in front of them. I say, guess what? When I go to Walmart, if I put this big old pretty ring on the cash register, that lady ring up my milk, she going to ask me for $3, please. She don't want that ring.
Mm-hmm.
That thing don't mean nothing to nobody but me and the 52 men that won.
Right.
That's it. Man, in life, you have to have resources to live.
Mm-hmm.
You can't live off football. Touchdowns don't eat. Touchdowns don't get you no food. Touchdowns and scoring and dunking on somebody when you was in third grade in 98, man, you ain't getting no milk because you dunked on somebody at the Garvey Rickles game.
Right.
You better have $3 to buy this milk.
That's true. That's real life.
You have to make people realize and understand and put stuff in a perspective way. Brother, the only way you're going to get anything for catching a touchdown is if you play for a professional team that pay you for that. Other than that, my man, don't nobody care. You just throw the touchdown.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of, and that's one of the things that being a coach and an athlete and considering myself to be a man, I don't have time to play around with the information that we give our athletes and our clients and our kids, because I have so many other things to do. To beat my head against a dead wall by giving people bad information ain't something I take pride in. So I tell people the truth, and I tell people right then what they need to do to help themselves with whatever it is they dealing with. And that's how we deal with stuff. And the guys and the people we work with know that what I'm telling them is the best information I have for them. So they generally do it.
That's what's up, man. Nah, but that's a good process, because, you know, you got to make sure people's psychological state is intact. So, like you said, they can eat, because you ain't got no resources. Your ass ain't eat.
Hey, man, everybody needs somebody in their life that don't mind telling them the truth.
That's true. That's true.
People that I'm in their life, they know that whenever they talk to me about whatever they're talking about, they are going to get the truth, period. whether it's in their favor or not. I told my little brother when he was playing at Alabama, talking about being a first-round draft pick, like, man, you 5'8", 180 pounds. Boy, you better think twice. You better go get you a whistle and learn how to coach. You ain't going to get drafted in no first round going to damn NFL, huh? And that's my little brother, and I love him to death.
Right.
But I had to prepare him for what was the reality of his situation. Homeboy, you ain't really, you good, but man, do you know how many guys that play at that level fit your demographic and profile that have actually been successful at doing it? Man, you got a better chance at being a coach at a Division I college team or coaching in the NFL than you do playing. So I think you might want to focus on what you have a better opportunity at. And look at both of my brothers. Both of my brothers have been head football coaches. Both of my brothers have been NFL coaches at the internship level where they work with teams in the Black Minority Coaching Program. Both of my brothers have coached Division I college football at several Division I colleges and major schools. So, shit, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just it. So that's what I lean on, Joe. When I talk to people about what we do and our success in what we do, the proof in the pudding, the people that I inspire to help, I just give them their background, and then that's my success rate right there. The two people that I've been trying to help all my life, they straight.
Right, right. Now, that's true, too. That's true. That's true. Man, and I saw the pictures you just recently put up on Facebook where you was able to take your kids and some kids up to Alabama, and they've got a chance to meet Jalen Hurts and Tua and all those things.
Yeah.
And that's cool as hell, because these kids are getting, like, you have to expose them to stuff like that so they'll know that it's bigger than their environment. Man, that's what's up, man. And then you, how many different football games were you able to take groups of kids this year?
Oh, Joe, man, I don't even count no more, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We do stuff so much with these kids, not just football games, but out in an event and outreach stuff. But we went to a couple of Alabama games, went to Valdosta State game, went to Florida State game, went to UCF, went to Birmingham for a three strikes camp, went to Orlando and Atlanta for three strikes events. So, I mean, man, you know, we just do what we can with taking these kids out to give them the best experience that they can with meeting people outside their circle. I tell people all the time, we tell our kids not to talk to strangers and then wonder why our kids don't know nobody. You know what I'm saying? I mean, bro, you want to meet people, you got to talk to people you don't know. That's the only way you're going to know and meet people. Be open, get kids out, give them a good environment, teach them stranger danger, but you also got to teach your kids that if you don't talk to strangers, you're never going to meet anybody new. So, you know, you got to be smart about how we teach them who or who not to talk to. But, you know, at the end of the day, I try to give all of our kids in our programming and the families that we work with, I try to give them experiences that help them with understanding what choices they want in life. Because telling people to make better decisions really don't mean nothing if you don't have good choices. So if you want a better life, change your choices. So by taking kids out and doing the stuff you're talking about, they get to see how what they thought in life was normal, the stuff that people do for real to have fun, man. This
Straight up. But like you said, being able to show these kids something different. So outside of just the realm of sports, You participate in a program called My Life. So can you kind of give the audience a little information about My Life?
Well, My Life, we work with kids who have some sort of either a mental health problem or issue that they're dealing with, identity issue, somewhat foster care kids. Some of our kids are DJJ, which is juvenile detention kids. They have some sort of a warrant order or court order to be in protective custody or always supervision. We have kids who are runaways, kids that are displaced, homeless, and I go in once a month, and I just love on these kids, man, that most people forgot about or they think nobody love them, and they show up for me every month, and they eat, and we hang out, and we go over sensitive issues. We talk about leadership skills, and I just try to give these kids a safe environment to be who they are for a moment. And we meet up and we go over different things. And we have, you know, people come in and speak to them and minister to them. And people come in and give them resources and help them with a bunch of different things throughout the year. And I try to introduce them to people who can bless their life and help them. We have sponsors that come in and give away laptops and gift cards to food places and just kind of support the kids and show them that, you know what I'm saying, they're not by themselves. So that's what we do, and Magellan Mental Health has been supporting the program, City of Tallahassee, Palmer Row Teen Center, Family Cafe, and some of those folks who support Carter's Corner. They come out and they help us with making sure that we got what we need to take care of the kids.
That's what's up, man.
And so, yeah, man, the kids, they perform. They perform. They do arts and craft. Really? They do all kind of poetry and all kind of stuff.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. But, you know, like you said, it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the interview about you being able to serve the community as well. So it's not just about sports, but it's about the community as a whole that what you do. So, like, you are a professor. Now, I forgot exactly what class you teach, but it's still within the realm of sports. So can you kind of elaborate on that? But also, that's another means of still being able to be connected with sports after you're not playing no more.
Right. I mean, I teach sports management classes across the curriculum because my degrees are very broad in nature. I have degrees in sports, fitness, recreation, fitness management, physical education and recreation, sports and fitness management, and sports management. So I have degrees and across all of those paths, which means right. I can teach everything from PE classes all the way to sports law, sports industry, intro to sports management, sports psychology. All of those classes are under the repertoire of the sports management program. So any of that stuff that's related to that is what I teach, man. Yeah. And I got kids that are master degree level students at Florida State, which is the number one sports management program in the country right now. So, okay. You know, I have kids that are working across the globe. Gilbert is one of my kids who mm-hmm. came through Carter's Corner. He's now over in Beijing, China, working with the national hockey team for Beijing, for China. And I have two great interns right now that are working with us, and they're starting our new project. We're going to be putting out a magazine coming up 2019 called The Hot Spot, highlighting some of our kids that are in our program. So my interns are working on putting together a magazine for Carter's Corner, man. So, you know, I get blessed by being around smart kids and people who have bright ideas, and we just going to make this thing work, man.
Right. Hey, man, life after sports can be great if you got this. The great determination and the will, but also resources. But like you say, you got to be able to talk to people who you may not know to be able to get to where you want to go, and you got to be willing to sacrifice. Man, before we wrap this up, can you give people like ways that they can contact you?
Oh, yeah, man. You can go to our website, which is carterscorner.org. That's carterscorner.org, C-A-R-T-E-R-S, corner, C-O-R-N-E-R.org. Or carterscorner@me.com. That's my email, carterscorner@me.com. C-A-R-T-E-R-S, corner, C-O-R-N-E-R, @ME.com. Shoot me an email. Go to the website. Donate if you can. You know, support what we do because we help a lot of kids and we don't get funding from anywhere other than what we do every day. Through our own personal resources and, you know, contracts and things of that nature. So, but we don't get any grant funding or anything. So go see what we do on the website and check us out. If you need us, we're always there. We somewhere. Just give us a call.
Right. That's what's up, man. I definitely appreciate you coming on, dropping that information, because As I say, this thing that I preach all the time on this show is about being able to prepare kids for more than just being athletes, because they more than athletes. They damn human beings, and we got to make sure that we prepare them like holistically to be successful in the world. So I appreciate what you do. I appreciate what you've done for me, and I appreciate what you're going to do for all the future generations, my man. But I ain't going to hold you up no more, and we appreciate you, man.
Hey, man, Joe, man, I appreciate what you're doing, man. You constantly building platforms for people like me to express what we do, to give people insight on what's out there and available. And that's big on your part, man, as being that guiding light. And that's what you need to know that you are. So you the guy that's out front. You always trying to figure out how to give other people some spotlight. But in order for them to get the spotlight, they got to get you out of the way first, because you always out front, right? So you just keep doing what you do, man. I appreciate what you do, man, and thank you for what's going on in your life to bless me, because you keep me going, bro.
Nah, man, I appreciate it, bro. I appreciate that. Yes, sir, man, because that means a lot coming from you, man, so I appreciate it.
Hey, man, well, I catch up with you, and I appreciate y'all audience and good folks out there. If you need us, give us a holler.
All right. Appreciate you, man. See you later.
All right, buddy.
Yep. Yes, everybody. Mr. Sam Carter. Yes. All right, so like I say, man, that's the first of our life after sports. You see it go down. And like I said, I wanted to have him on because he gave real information, like real practical information that people need. Like if you're not getting this information, you're not going to be able to make it. And life goes on after sports, like it really does. It really goes on after sports. And if you're not prepared for it, you won't be successful. And that's just on the real, man. So one time for Sam Carter and everything that he's doing out here in these communities. All right, so let's talk about week 13 of the college football season, which is basically rivalry week. You know, that for a lot of teams, that final game. So let's see how rivalry week went. Ball State falls to Miami of Ohio 21-42. Northern Illinois loses to Western Michigan 21-28. Air Force beats Colorado State 27-19. Mississippi State beat their in-state rival, Mississippi, 35-3. Mississippi State was ranked 18th in the nation. Number 14, Texas, ekes out a victory over Kansas, 24-17. Missouri beat Arkansas. Well, they blanked Arkansas. They dropped their nuts on Arkansas, 38-0. UCF beat South Florida in their rivalry game, 38-10. And UCF should be moving up in the, well, they're eighth in the ranking right here. And you know I'm going to go through the college football playoff ranking for you. Oklahoma, number 5, Oklahoma beat number 16, West Virginia, 59-56. And what was a thrilling game. So let's look at these quarterback numbers real quick between Kyler Murray and Will Greer, right? Two of the best quarterbacks in the nation. I still think Will Greer is the best quarterback by pro prospect. I know a lot of people don't think so, because he's been in that spread offense in West Virginia, but they forget what he did under center at Florida, right? So Kyler Murray went 20 for 27, 364 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 pick. see what Will Greer did, even though Kyler Murray got the win. Will Greer went 32-49, 539 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. Will Greer that deal, I'm telling y'all, man. Will Greer that deal. So yeah, that's what happened as far as the quarterback duel in that game. And we got number 11 Washington over they defeated number 13 Washington State 28-13. We needed Washington State to win so more teams can move up. Number 9 Florida, well, they were number 11 at the time, but number 9 Florida defeated the in-state rival Florida State 41-14. Of course, you know I watched that game, so I didn't watch the Michigan Ohio State. I watched Florida State because I'm a Florida dude and I like Florida football, right? Now, speaking of Ohio State, Michigan, Ohio State was ranked number 6, Michigan. Well, currently Ohio State is 6, Michigan 7, but at that time, I think Ohio State was 10th and Michigan was 4th, right? And Ohio State dropped their nuts on Michigan, 62-39. Jim Harbaugh is still winless against Ohio State. Urban Meyer has beat Michigan 7 years in a row. Georgia Tech, number 4 now. They moved up in the rankings. I think they were number 6 at the time, but they beat Georgia Tech 45-21. Syracuse beats Boston College 42-21. Syracuse is ranked 20th in the nation. Penn State currently is ranked 12th. They beat Maryland 38-3. Northwestern is currently ranked 21st, and they beat Illinois 24-16. And Northwestern is going to play Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship game. Alabama beat the in-state rival Auburn 52-21. I watched that game. Alabama was never in fear of losing that game, even though Auburn gave them a game in the beginning. Yeah, it was never a feel of Alabama might be in trouble. Nah, not with that offense, not with them athletes. That shit was crazy. Matter of fact, let's look at some of these stats from Alabama. I don't care about Auburn. So Tua went 25-32. 324 yards, 5 touchdowns, and he had 1 rushing touchdown. So he had 6 total touchdowns. Jalen Hurts came in, completed 1 pass for 53 yards and 1 touchdown. So that's kind of how the game went. Like, yeah, that's kind of how the game went, man. So Alabama put that thing on Auburn 52-21. Alabama will play Georgia in the SEC championship game. Number 25, Fresno State beat San Jose State 31-13. Iowa State beat Kansas State 42-38. Iowa's currently ranked 23rd. Kentucky, who currently ranked 15, beat Louisville 56-10. Clemson, who's number 2, of course, we know, beat South Carolina 56-35. Number 3, Notre Dame, beat USC to remain undefeated 24-17. BYU lost to Utah, who's number 17, 35-27. And Boise State beat Utah State 33-24, and Boise State is ranked 33rd. So the game I'm going to end up on is LSU-Texas game where LSU-Texas A&M. And currently LSU is ranked 10th, Texas A&M 19th. But the final score of this game was 72-74, and they had 7 overtimes. 72-74, 7 overtimes. So LSU's quarterback, Joe Burrow, he went 25-38, 270 yards, 3 touchdowns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, backup, he went 1-for-1. Well, I guess, I don't know. Well, he's a running back. He threw a touchdown for 11 yards. These stats not as gawking as I thought, at least not on LSU side. Let's see Texas A&M side. Now, these stats really not as gawking other than you got a receiver, Trevion Williams, almost had 20 yards. He had 198 yards receiving 2 touchdowns. I don't know. I guess it's just overall bad defense and whatever. But 72-74 is the final score of this LSU-Texas A&M game, which is really fucking ridiculous. That's basketball score. And basketball score. So let me give you the updated college football top 25 poll. And number 25 is Fresno State at 10-2. 24 is Missouri at 8-4. Number 23 is Iowa State 7-4. 22 is Boise State 10-2. Number 21 Northwestern at 8-4. Number 20 Syracuse at 9-3. Texas A&M is 19-8-4. Mississippi State is 18-8-4. Utah is 17-9-3. West Virginia is 16-8-3. Kentucky is 15-8-3. Texas is 14-8-3. Washington State is 13-10-2. Penn State is 12-9-3. Washington, University of Washington, is 11th at 9-3. LSU is 10th at 9-3. Florida is 9th at 9-3. Then we get to UCF at number 8, who's 11-0. Michigan, who's number 7 at 10-2. Ohio State, who's number 6 at 11-1. Oklahoma is 5th at 11-1. Georgia is 4th at 11-1. Notre Dame is 3rd at 12-0. Clemson is 2nd at 12-0. And Alabama is 1 at 12-0. So something going to give. Notre Dame don't have no championship game to play, so they're not really moving. Clemson got to play Pitt. I don't expect Pitt to beat Clemson, so I don't think Clemson's going to move up. Alabama to play at Georgia. I expect Alabama to beat Georgia, which will, if Oklahoma win the Big 12, or I don't even remember if they got the championship game, but teams can move up. Ohio State can move up by winning their Big 12, their Big 10 game. UCF maybe could move up by winning that conference. Because either Georgia or Alabama going to lose. But if Alabama lose, then Georgia will move. The top four won't really change. If Georgia beat Alabama, the top four won't really change unless Clemson lose to Pitt. So that's college football, top 25 college football playoff ranking, which will determine who gets into the Final Four, which determines the Final Two, what will lead to the Final Two, and then get the champion. So, time for our weekly rant. And like I said, this just on G code, man. This on man code. This on some real shit. Stephen A. Smith called for Marvin Lewis. He publicly called for Marvin Lewis to be fired. Looked in the camera. I don't give a damn because the black community is always on me talking about I'm selling out and stuff. I'm paraphrasing. I don't give a damn what the black community thinks. Marvin Lewis should be fired 16 years of coaching in Cincinnati and not winning a championship or not winning a playoff game. And I'm like, I agree that Marvin Lewis ain't the coach for the Bengals to really get them over that hump. I agree. But just on some real shit, you don't, as a man, you don't go on national TV and publicly call for another man to lose his job. Just as a man, on some man shit. Like, why are you so wired up to get this man fired from his job? Now, I understand, but for you to go publicly call for some whole shit, and then got to be called out on that pussy shit right there, Stephen A. Smith, because that's some real fuckboy pussy shit to really go on. He needs to be fired. I want Marvin Lewis fired. Well, Stephen A., we want your hairline fired. How about that? We want your barber fired. Everything about that fired. We want you. How about you be fired from ESPN? But see, I ain't no hoe like that. So I'm not going to call for Stephen A. Smith's job to be fired, for him to be fired from his job. But what I am going to do is remind him that use a pussy for that. Use a bitch for that. Like, come on, man, you don't do that. Even though I fully agree with you that Marvin Lewis should not be the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. Just on some real shit, like, as a man, I ain't even talking about no real nigga shit. I'm just talking about some real shit as a man. You don't go on TV like he did, like a hoe, and call for that man to be fired. And I know a lot of cats in the sports realm do that, and I think they all some pussy boys. I think they all some fuck boys for it. And you've heard me say this multiple times. This is not my first time saying this. Me, I got a policy. I ain't going to go call for no person's job like that, especially in something like sports, unless that person is doing some fuck shit like some Larry Nassar pussy dumb shit that they shouldn't be doing. Now, Marvin Lewis is simply not winning football games. So are you that emotionally fucked up that he's not doing what I want him to do? He's not making me feel bad. And I understand he's not getting the team over that playoff hump. I get that. And like I say, I agree with Steven that Marvin Lewis should not be the coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. But the manner in which you are going about to try to be able to add to this man getting fired or be the single cause of this man getting fired is some straight fuckboy shit. And you got to be called out on it just as a man. As a man, you don't do that. That's some hoe shit. I expect hoe ass niggas to do some shit like that. I expect some hoe ass folk to do some shit like that. Not no real man. Not somebody who considers themselves a real man. A stand up dude who live by a code. Obviously, none of that applies to you. You ain't no real man. You ain't no stand up man. You ain't got no code that you live by, unless it's the cracker code. Because we know Stephen A. Smith loved the buck dance and coon and tap dance for these crackers. We know that. He loves the crackers. Stephen A. loves the crackers. So Stephen A. will say whatever the fuck he got to say to ingratiate himself with them crackers. We already know that. Everybody knows Stephen A. Smith a fuckboy when it comes to that. So that's why he always getting called out on that. And that's why he always getting mad. If you mad at the black community calling you out for doing that whole shit and that tap dance, then stop fucking doing it. Nobody making you doing it. You don't have to do that to be successful. Stuart Scott didn't have to do that to be successful. And look how successful Stuart Scott was. Stuart Scott, the OG. Bomani Jones don't do that. I'm just talking about straight corn tap dancing shit. Like, Stuart Scott ain't have to do it. At least if he did it, he didn't do it on camera. Not like you, right? So if he did it, at least he had enough respect for the folk to not do it on camera. But, oh, not Stephen A. Smith. Nope. Stephen A. Smith got the tap dance on camera. I want Marvin Lewis to be fired. Well, shit, we want your hairline to be different, but it ain't, right? We want you to stop cooning, but you won't. So we all look like we all here screaming about what we want. But the difference in us screaming about what we want is we not trying to have somebody lose their job and not be able to eat and make their money, all based off some emotional attachment to a motherfucking football game. At the end of the day, when you really break it down, it's a fuck-ass emotional attachment to a motherfucking football game, and he's a bitch for it. Right? Like, you ain't even no goddamn Bengals fan. I could see if you was a fan. If you was a fan of the Bengals, I might have let you slide for it. Like, I want Jerry Jones to not be the head coach of the Cowboys. I don't want Jason Garrett to be my head coach. But as a man, I'm not going to go on no platform and call for Jason Garrett to get fired, even though I do not want Jason Garrett to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. I do not like Jason Garrett. But I don't like Jerry Jones even more than I don't like Jason Garrett. But what I'm not going to do is call for Jason Garrett to be fired. As a man, especially not in no public space, going no public space, he needs to be fired. Man, that's some whole shit, man. Men don't do that. And I'm a man. And as a man, I live by a code. And my code says that as another man, it's not my job to try to take food out of another man's mouth. If anything, I'm trying to help that man put food in his mouth. I'm not going to call for that man to not be able to feed his family. Even though his situation is different, he still will be able to feed his family $1 million wife, but just the principle at the end of the day. Because if you do it to a rich motherfucker, you do it to a poor motherfucker too. So that's just, you know what I'm saying, what I'm getting off my chest and expressing to Stephen A. Smith is stop with the whole shit, man. You ain't got to do all that to chill, bro. You ain't got to do all that to be down, bro. You ain't got to do all that to be successful at what you do. Like, a lot of shit that you do to, quote unquote, be successful at what you do, I be questioning. Like, you don't have to do that, though. But in your mind, I guess you have to do it. And I guess probably now you have to do it and keep it up because that's how the white folks see you. The white folks see you as that dude who do that dumb shit, who do that whole shit. So since the white folks see you and know that you that do that, then, you know, I guess you got to keep it up now. Start out being a bitch, you got to end up being a bitch, right? That's just how I did. I would never understand. I ain't bitch made. My dad ain't no bitch. I ain't no bitch. I wasn't raised by no dudes who was fuck boys. So I ain't no fuck boy nowhere in me. I live by a certain code. I'm about some other shit. I may not like you, but unless you're doing like some of that bullshit, that Larry Nassar shit, I ain't finna call you to get your job over some of these fuck-ass emotional attachments to some football game, man. If they fire him, they fire him. Let them fire him. But he needs to be fired right now. Man, you need to shut the fuck up right now. How about that? You bitch ass. Sit your stupid ass down, Stephen A. Smith, man. You ain't shit. You ain't sitting. I don't care. I'm going to look right in the camera. The black community always getting on me. Well, stop doing whole shit and want nobody have to get on your pussy ass. How about that? Hey, man, that's my Friday rant, and I don't give a shit about what Stephen A. thinks about it. Stop being a hoe. That's my Friday rant, though. I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Fit Sports Podcast. I want to give a special thank you once again to Mr. Sam Carter coming through, dropping all that knowledge on us about how to about his transition from sports to the civilian world and how he helped not only his brothers, but plenty of other people transition from sports to the civilian world and be able to thrive. Gave him a plan. He gave him a practical plan to be able to use. That's what we like to promote here on the Fit Sports Podcast. So I'm Joseph Ward. Hey, man, remember, this is the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Two fingers in the air like a real player. You know, we get died.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
Rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best.